This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. We tape in the offices of Raider, a hands-on IT service provider that integrates all of your needs for advanced technical support, effective communication options, and cybersecurity. Raider's motto is, you just want it to work, we understand. Please visit RaiderSolutions.com for more information. I'd like to thank Iberia Bank, our premier sponsor. They support our community in so many ways, and their dynamic team is committed to serving the banking needs of clients in this region and throughout the southeastern United States. Iberia Bank offers the resources of a national bank with the personal touch of a community bank. Please visit iberiabank.com for more information. The generosity of Lafayette General Health also makes this podcast possible, and we thank them for being a premier sponsor. As Acadiana's largest nonprofit regional health system, Lafayette General Health is committed to restoring, maintaining, and improving health in the communities it serves. For more information, visit LafayetteGeneral.com. Our guest today is Reese Thériault of Fulcrum Sales and Marketing. Reese is an in-demand presenter on how to ensure effective sales and marketing campaigns. He has an MBA from UL Lafayette and was an instructor of sales, marketing, and entrepreneurship. Reese was also the head coach of the sales team with the UL Lafayette Moody College of Business. With the pandemic shutting down most of our economy the last 6 weeks, these are trying times for business owners. I'm looking forward to hearing Reese's thoughts on using the best tools to market effectively. Reese Thériault, welcome to Discover Lafayette.
Thank you, Jan. Thank you for that introduction, and thanks for having me.
Yeah, you really are an in-demand presenter. You bring an engaging presence to the stage, and I know we're all looking forward to hearing you, I think, next week with the Small Business Development Roundtable. I think if you're still on the agenda, we're all looking forward to hearing, you know, just some tips about how we can all learn more about marketing our business and also probably things not to do. So you want to tell us about your background before we jump into that? What got you into this field?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm very much looking forward to that presentation as well. I'll try not to double dip into the content too much. But because I think kind of the whole theme of that presentation is similar to what our conversation is going to be about today. Mm-hmm. So I guess I can start by, you know, kind of sharing my story. I'll be brief with my story and then kind of wrap that up into what's going on today.
All right.
And kind of start going down the trail of some of the recommendations that I've gotten from some of my mentors and from some of the subject matter experts that I follow and some of the books I've read and kind of from some of the things that we've experienced at Fulcrum, my team and I. Mm-hmm. And so my story is, you know, I was born and raised in a small town called Catahoula, which is right next to St. Martinville. And so when you grow up in a town like Catahoula, you really grow up into the next biggest city. And so I usually say I'm from St. Martinville. Mm-hmm. And so had a normal childhood, was bullied a lot as a kid, which kind of fueled my sense of wanting to be unique and kind of be, kind of blaze my own trail because right. I wasn't really accepted by my peers all that much. Maybe I shouldn't say that I had conflict mm-hmm. as a child. And so, I was a really good student and, I was very involved with the church and still am today. And so anytime you mesh those two things together in an 8 year old, you know, there's going to be subsequent bullying to follow. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, had two really good role models, my dad and my mother, and, followed my dad's advice all my life. And so my mom and my dad always said that knowing my personality, I would either be a lawyer, I would be a lawyer, a salesperson, or a politician, right?
and that so, was meant as a compliment.
that was a compliment. And so, you know, I guess I was always the performer in the group. Mm-hmm. When I was a kid, my parents used to make us make all kind of arts and crafts and sell them at the local farmer's market. And when my crafts would stop selling, I learned how to juggle, ride a unicycle, and kind of put on a little performance in front of my booth. And I'd make more money in tips than I would in craft sales.
Wow.
And so, but I guess that kind of always followed me, that entrepreneurial bug. And, mm-hmm. you know, all through my life, both in high school and college and grad school, I've always had like a little entrepreneurial venture. And my first real exposure to sales was right after my undergraduate degree. So I graduated in public relations. And as you know, and a lot of PR majors know out there, we have a very solid PR curriculum at UL. But unfortunately, our local market, Lafayette at large, isn't really a place where public relations professionals can thrive.
Right.
There's just not a whole lot of demand for a publicist. Here in a local town, you know, publicists really thrive in like big cities, mm-hmm. Or working for big corporations in big cities, especially. And so I learned really quickly that although I was very well trained, PR really wasn't a career for me because I didn't really want to move. I wanted to plant roots in Lafayette and grow something here. So I got into sales and I was selling medical equipment, medical devices. I worked for the largest sports medicine device company in the nation called Arthrex.
Okay.
And Arthrex, we sold all different types of medical devices, implants, screws, plates, suture, various devices to help with soft tissue and bone repairs. And so that was a pretty challenging position, especially being 21 years old, coming out of college, never have taken an anatomy class. You know, I remember my first day on the job, I didn't even know what a patella was, which is a kneecap bone. I had no idea what that was.
And a lot of those go out around here.
right. It sounded like a vegetable to me. You know, I was like, what's a patella? And so I was kind of just thrown to the wolves and drinking through a fire hose with that new job. But I started to realize that I had a knack for asking questions, listening to people, and really understanding what they wanted from Arthrex. And then I would go find it and I would bring it back to them and sell it, quote unquote, sell it to them. Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, my manager, after watching me do that over and over and over again, without even getting a commission for any of the sales, because when I first started, I wasn't a commissioned rep. He was like, okay, Reese can do this. You know, that we got to get him in the field talking with docs and doing the thing. And so I was promoted about a year and a half in and became a full bag rep for about a year and a half. And then became a distal extremity specialist. So I specialized in hands and feet, wrist and ankle repairs. Mm-hmm. And had a great career. Did that for about 4 years. Then I transitioned into the role that you were speaking about, which is teaching sales and marketing and entrepreneurship at UL,
right.
Leading the sales team. When I started teaching at UL, I was 24 years old. I would lie to my students about my age all the time. Because,
but you still look very young, so well, you must have really looked young.
Yeah, I did. And I mean, I was teaching 23-year-olds, uh-huh. You know, at 21 to 23,
your
and
peers.
I was 24.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was a challenging environment. You know, I went from medical sales where every physician I was working with had been practicing medicine longer than mm-hmm. I had been a teenager, mm-hmm. You know?
Right.
And I mean, they were operating on people when I was in second grade. And mm-hmm. So I had to come in and tell them how to do their job in some respect. And that was a very challenging thing for me to learn how to do in a humble and inquisitive and polite but direct kind of way. And then when I went into education at UL, I had to kind of flip the script and also I took a lot of that information with me and had to speak from a place of authority, even though I didn't really have a whole lot of authority, mm-hmm. You know?
I was going to say, I never took sales or marketing when I was in college. Mm-hmm. And so I'm trying to picture these young students are eager to have careers, hopefully, you know, in what you're teaching them. And do they realize when they're in these classes that maybe I'm not cut out to be a salesperson, or does that happen once you're out in the field?
No, they know. A lot of them will realize that while they're in the classroom. So to kind of speak towards sales as a entry level profession, you know, I think the data is somewhere around 89% of first year graduates coming out of business school, especially marketing programs, will go into sales as their first career.
Okay.
And if you look at a lot of CEOs and executives, a lot of them started their career in sales. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so sales profession is kind of the bedrock of any career with almost any business to business company. And so we really harp on that at UL in training them adequately so that when they get into that first job, they're prepared, they can be successful. It puts them on a path to success. Mm-hmm. And because, you know, that's gonna reflect good on the student, it's gonna reflect good on the educator, and it's gonna reflect good on the university.
Right.
In those classes, they're really geared to where so the way the class works is, you know, first half of the semester, we're really teaching them about how to be good listeners, how to be people of integrity, kind of the basics about professionalism and about sales. Mm-hmm. And then the second half of the class, we're really focusing on how do they appropriately have the conversation with someone who's interested in buying a product or a service. And so we do that through a series of role plays. Mm-hmm. Where they sit down with a fictitious buyer and they have that sales conversation. It's videotaped, and the educator is reviewing the tapes and grading the conversation with a rubric.
Uh-huh.
And so there's a sense of pressure there, right? And there's a stage to perform on. And sales is kind of like that. And so if someone's uncomfortable with that environment where they got to walk in a room and really put out the enthusiasm and ask good questions and have that real good conversation and push people a little bit. If they're uncomfortable with that, then they're probably going to be uncomfortable
right.
with sales as a profession.
Right. And we were joking about that before the podcast started, Reese, about Alec Baldwin's character, Blake, you know, in Glengarry Glen Ross.
That's right.
Blake gave that famous scene, Always Be Closing, the ABCs. When right. he was talking to the people and, you know, really just berating them, these group of just, you know, guys that didn't seem too motivated. But sometimes people think, and I'm thinking about what your parents said about you too, either to be a lawyer, a politician, or a salesperson, there can be these stereotypes about, you know, not hucksters, but we can be. I'm a lawyer, so I can speak for that. We can be stereotyped. But it sounds like at UL, when the kids are learning, they're really learning the right way to approach people and to give value when they're selling. But that's not always the perception.
It's not. It's not. And I think, you know, I think every profession comes with its own stigma. You know, you can kind of go down a series of professions and people will say, oh, you know, like physicians have a God complex. You know, they're egotistical. Lawyers, lawyers are word merchants. They just talk a lot, write a lot, and they sell it by word, you know, like you can kind of every profession has its stereotype and their own stigma, and sales definitely has that. And those stigmas, I think, are driven and produced by the worst of the worst
in any profession.
That's right. And so I think the role of any professional is to break that stigma very quickly by building massive amounts of rapport and trust with individuals, you know?
Right.
Having a good reputation and letting that reputation precede you in a conversation to where when you do meet somebody, oh yeah, I've heard your name, you know, from XYZ and they have great things to say. I mean, that stigma is going to go away, even if you are a salesperson.
Right.
Right.
Or a lawyer.
Or a lawyer or a doctor or whatever profession you are. And I think that's really important to speak to Glengarry Glen Ross. When I was a teacher at UL, my very first class, I played that video every single class for 9 semesters straight.
It's or so however many
semesters. And what I was trying to do was show the students where this stereotype came from and that good salespeople are not this.
Right.
Now, there is an element of competition. There's an element of grit. There's an element of kind of aggression in sales. You know, you have to be a go-getter. You have to be willing to challenge people to think differently about their situation and about their problems and about their business and about themselves. You have to do that. But when that pendulum swings all the way to the Alec Baldwin direction, it sort of makes people think that, oh, these guys are just in it for money. And, you know, that's not exact. Any good sales professional will tell you that they are not that. They're not that.
Right.
You know,
I want to ask you though, we're all in sales, aren't we? I didn't realize that until later in life, but we're all, whatever it is, if we're in business, whether we're lawyers or have a, you know, a little store on the corner, we're selling our wares.
Well, you know, we're all in the business of three things: educating, learning, and motivating. Everyone is in those three subsets of business. That applies to anything you do in life. So you got to figure out how to motivate people. If you want to influence change in yourself, you got to figure out what motivates you. If you want to influence change in other people, changing their behaviors, you have to find out what motivates them. Mm-hmm. And doing that means you have to ask good questions. You've got to build rapport so that they give you straight answers. You've got to listen effectively. You've got to spend time with people. You've got to learn how to break down the walls so that you can have those conversations, so that you can get to their motivation. And then the next thing is, everyone's an educator, right? It's just, what are you educating people on? Mm-hmm. Lawyers educate people on the law. They educate people on regulations. They educate people on how to win a case. They educate people on what kind of suit do they have on their hands? You know, that's what it's an education game. Mm-hmm. And I think that applies to everybody. Doctors, you go to the doctor's office, and the best doctors are the ones that are going to spend time with the patient and educate them about what's going on so that they feel comfortable.
Right.
Right.
And build that trust.
That's right. That's right. And if they realize that this patient wants to get better, then they'll use that as motivation so that they can make a decision that will ultimately save their life or improve their quality of life. Mm-hmm. And then the final thing, it's education, motivation, and learning, right? Like, I think the best professionals, and salespeople are included in that, are just lifelong learners, constantly learning. What do people need? What do people want? How is the market changing? How is, for example, how is COVID affecting change throughout society, throughout community, throughout my marketplace, throughout the people that are buying my product or service, throughout my team? I think the best professionals are learners. And I think those three things kind of work together in a conjoined effort.
Right. Reese, if you would, let's hold that thought. I'd like to pause and thank Rally Marketing for sponsoring a new addition to our podcast, Discover Lafayette's Past. Rally Marketing is a full-service digital marketing agency that can assist you with marketing automation, content development, search engine optimization, strategy, or just show you how to use social media to turn into a moneymaker for your business. Our friends at Rally Marketing are there to help you navigate the maze of all the latest ways to market effectively online. For more information, visit rallymarketing.com. And now our moment, looking back on the history of the Hyman Performing Arts Center. Architect A. Hayes Town designed the first municipal auditorium in Lafayette in 1957 under the direction of Mayor Jerome DiMaggio and Herbert Hyman. Their vision was to serve the 8-parish area of South Louisiana we now call Acadiana. Construction on the auditorium was completed in 1960. And now, 60 years later, we know the former municipal auditorium as the Hyman Performing Arts Center. Located in the Oil Center, the auditorium has hosted untold numbers of dance recitals, Broadway musicals, concerts, symphony performances, and theater arts, and of course, Mardi Gras celebrations. With a 2,168 seating capacity and state-of-the-art acoustics, the Hyman Performing Arts Center continues to draw crowds who enjoy an eye out on the town and making memories. Our hub city has certainly benefited from the foresight and leadership of Jerome DiMaggio and Herbert Hyman. Okay, Reese Terrio, welcome back to Discover Lafayette. Let's talk about your business, Fulcrum Sales and Marketing. A lot of us aren't comfortable with sales, even if we know we have to sell our products. And I know that you offer services, and I thought you could share with us maybe some, you know, higher level ideas about what you call inbound and outbound marketing. I think these are things we know about, but we may not know what the lingo is. So if you can talk about how you help people.
Right, absolutely. So I'll start by saying that Fulcrum Sales and Marketing is really a unorthodox marketing agency. I say that because we're really more of a sales agency, mm-hmm. Working with business-to-business companies to help them prospect and find new opportunities, develop relationships with new business, close new business, and ultimately pack on revenue and the best kind of revenue, right? Not just not just helping people increase sales, but our mission is to create meaningful connections with and for our customers. And so it's not just about selling, it's about creating long-term relationships that produce win-win situations for both our clients and our clients' customers.
So you're not just like setting them up with, here's how you do this. You've got people that are boots on the ground.
Yeah, we do. And you know,
that work with your clients.
Absolutely. Kind of where that idea, the whole genesis of Fulcrum really came from a couple different problems that I was seeing in the local market. One of the big problems that I saw was that all of my students coming out of UL, they were very, very bright, driven, educated young people, and they had a lot of fire in the belly, and they wanted to get into sales. The challenge is that not many companies in our local area wanted to take a gamble in hiring a entry-level salesperson with no experience. Mm-hmm. So most companies required upfront or preferred that you had 3 years experience in sales for a sales position. And so my students would always ask me, Reese, where are we going to find this 3 years of experience if nobody wants to give us a chance? Mm-hmm. And so that was a big problem that I saw and one that I wanted to fix in a way. The second problem that I saw was before Fulcrum, I was really active as a sales trainer and consultant, worked for Stuller, training some of their salespeople and consulting with them on special projects, worked with other companies throughout the local area and started to realize that the large majority of the companies in our local market, they didn't need sales training or consulting. They needed someone to own the problem of sales. So that's not to say that a lot of companies in our local market don't have great sales talent or management. They absolutely do. But for this type of thing, they really wanted someone to own the problem and help them solve it, not so much train their people how to sell better or train or create new consultative ideas. They wanted boots on the ground. They
wanted a contract sales person.
Yeah. They wanted a service to be provided. Not just the recipe book. They wanted someone to cook the recipe.
So that's what made you start Fulcrum.
That's what made me start Fulcrum. And so, the kind of what we see at Fulcrum is if you don't know what a fulcrum is, number one, a fulcrum is a simple machine that allows a lever to create leverage. And so what we like to say is we're the fulcrum, our customers are the lever, and together we create leverage. And how we do that is I have a proprietary process of vetting and onboarding young entry-level salespeople. My God-given talent is sales training and sales coaching and selling. And so I can get that entry-level talent performing at a level that before they couldn't perform at. And then we bolt on to our clients' teams as their very own salespeople. And we help them create and generate customer relationships.
How do you do that? I know you can't give away all your secrets, but you know, for those of us that are listening, that are trying to market things, like, you know, we've met before about my marketing, the podcast, Discover Lafayette. Where do people start? You know, like cold calls are kind of scary, you know, for most of right. us. Can you talk about some of that?
I can. So really the core of where to start, and let me back up. Have you ever read Simon Sinek's book, Start With Why?
Yes, I've read parts of it. Yes, I think okay, because so, you told me about it. Yeah,
really, really, really good book. Okay, and what Simon is saying is the why is the motivator. Why should someone act a certain way? Why does it? Should they care? What's the why behind it? That'll motivate people. People will be attracted to the why and not so much the how or the what. Mm-hmm. And so I think he's right, but I think he's missing a piece, which is the who. Who is the target of that why? If you can't identify the who, it's really hard to understand their why. Does that make sense?
Like your potential market.
That's right. If that's it, and companies have a really hard time identifying exactly who they want to sell to. Mm-hmm.
They want to sell to everybody.
they want to be everything to everyone. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, you become nothing to no one. Mm-hmm. Right. And so we work hand in hand with our clients to really help challenge their way of thinking to say, okay, who is your who? If we can identify that very specific target, then why they should work with you guys or why my customer should work with me becomes very obvious.
And then you can provide the value.
That's right.
If they want this product or this service. Uh-huh.
That's it. And also it helps you to really understand the bedrock of your marketing campaign. If I want to go out, if my value proposition specifically resonates with this type of customer and that customer is very specifically defined, then I have a lot more information to go proactively find my customer and have those conversations with them.
Is this easier with digital, you know, like with all the information that's out there? Or is this just a different day because of what the internet offers, the information you can get?
Well, that's a great point. And so that's kind of a segue to what's the difference between inbound and outbound marketing. And, you know, inbound and outbound marketing are just new ways of saying push and pull marketing, which, you know, if you've been around business for a while, you've definitely heard the terms push and pull marketing. Push marketing would be pushing your message onto a customer. So imagine like a direct mail piece, sending someone a cold email, an unsolicited email, mm-hmm. making a cold call. That's all pushing your message onto a customer base.
Hoping some of it sticks. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. And pull marketing is more like slowly courting the customer through various mediums to you. Okay. So imagine like a networking event. Mm-hmm. You go to the watering hole in hopes to pull people towards your booth. Digital marketing is the new revolutionary format for highly effective pull marketing. And nowadays we call push marketing outbound marketing, and we call pull marketing inbound marketing. Okay. And so the two strategies really work well together. Every company should be doing a push and a pull type marketing effort, because the two fuel each other. It's like a yin and yang type relationship, symbiotic relationship. Most companies today are doing more of an inbound marketing effort, which is effective. However, what typically happens with an inbound marketing effort is you're sort of letting the market define who works with you, because that might not be true. It's definitely true in the onset of the inbound marketing campaign, because you want to sort of appeal to a broad base so that your customers sort of self-elect in to your company as a lead. And then your salespeople or yourself would you know, have those conversations with those leads that come in through your website, and you can ask them about what sort of needs and problems they have, and then it becomes a sales conversation, or a fit conversation. How do we fit together?
Right.
In an outbound or a push side of the world, you would be proactively reaching out to that very specific customer base and having those conversations.
Mm-hmm. I have a question.
So one's a little reactive, one's a little proactive,
right,
but both work really well together, hand in hand. Mm-hmm.
I have a question for you though. You're on the sales end. Do you help people with their actual website and logos and all, or do you take them once they're ready to be looking for clients?
So that's a great question. Most of our customers already have a website built. Mm-hmm. They've already got some product market fit. You know, they have an idea of who their customer is and what their customer's buying, or what their customer sees value in. So we usually pick up at that point. But we have had customers come to us and say, you know, we really don't have anything. So we've built some websites, and some of that too, because, you know, sales is really a positioning question. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by positioning is, how do you position your product or service in the mind of the consumer or the buyer?
Right.
Right. And what most companies do poorly is they say, well, I'm going to get on the shelf that all of my competition's on. Mm-hmm. And so now you're on a crowded shelf.
And you all look the same.
You know. And everybody looks the same. And so what, and then what you realize is, oh man, I'm in a very crowded shelf. I need to be different. And so maybe you pack it. Yeah. Well, or you package yourself with a different color packaging, or you say, we're like everybody else, but we're this. And you say, this is how we're unique. Right. And service companies are so bad about this, because they'll say, you know, what makes us different is the quality of our service. Well, every other service company is saying that. You know, so in the mind of the buyer, it doesn't sound that unique. Mm-hmm. What I like to try to do for my customers and for myself is to say, okay, there's other shelves on this rack. How do I get to a whole nother shelf where there's very little competition, and so that I stand out? Right. And then I can back, and then from that shelf, because understand the complexity with that too, is people like to buy what they're used to buying. And so making analogies and similes is often very conducive in a sales conversation, because you can say, well, we're like this, but this is how we're different. And so the customer can say, oh yeah, I know, I'm familiar with that. And then this difference sounds interesting. But what you really should be doing is understanding the who, repositioning your whole message around that who and what they're going to see as valuable, and then through the conversation, backing into what is similar, what is the same, what is comfortable. You know, because it's what I like to tell, tell people, and it's not my original quote. I don't remember the original author, but it's a lot easier to sell different than it is to sell better. Selling better is hard. Mm-hmm. selling different, getting people interested in different is easy.
Is that by being yourself and determining first, what is it I'm trying to offer and being intentional about what you're presenting to people? I mean, is that? Yeah, absolutely.
It's all about intent. You know, I think our mutual friend Jeff Stewart says it best when he says, hey, look, every company has a SWOT analysis. They have their internal strengths and weaknesses, and they have their external opportunities and threats. And then every buyer has their own SWOT analysis. Their company has its own strengths and weaknesses and opportunities and threats, mm-hmm. right? And I think what Jeff so eloquently always demonstrates is that where the seller's strength lines up with the buyer's weakness becomes the seller's opportunity. Uh-huh. And so once you identify the who do you want to sell to? Who is your target? Who's your customer? Then you can start to identify and ask questions and understand their weaknesses and how their external threats are aligning with those weaknesses. Mm-hmm. That understanding becomes your opportunity to serve and to add value.
So Reese, with today's, our economy, you know, between the oil and gas market taking a huge, I mean, they're just decimated right now, and the pandemic, it seems like sales and marketing are a lot of our weaknesses because people are just mm-hmm. so worried about tomorrow, today, you know.
Right.
And
right.
So businesses need to be, I guess, ramping up their marketing while they're dealing with customers, potential customers that are afraid to spend money. So what in today's environment, what words of wisdom maybe you can share about small business people that are don't necessarily have a big budget? You know, how do people cope with what we have going on?
So that's a really, really good question. And it's a question that I don't think anybody has the definitive answer to. Small businesses, medium businesses, even big businesses mm-hmm. are absolutely getting obliterated right now. Mm-hmm. And some, fortunately for our economy, some businesses are actually doing very well in this type of situation. That's a great thing because it's going to help carry our economy forward while everyone else is trying to pivot and figure out how to do this in a different way.
Right.
I think what I'd like to do, Jan, is talk a little bit about, you know, a colleague of mine, Skip Boudreau, and I held a virtual conference a couple of days ago called the Cap the Gap Conference.
Say it again, please.
It was called the Cap the Gap.
Okay.
And the idea behind that was we wanted to help people capitalize on the social distance between everything. And so it was, you know, capitalizing the gap between everybody. Mm-hmm. And so in the Cap the Gap conference, we had two different panels. We brought panelists from all over the country together to have conversations around this exact issue. The first panel session was called Finding Buyers When Nobody's Buying.
And then the second panel
was about building businesses during a crisis. And what I'd like to do is just kind of read the takeaways
sure.
that I summarized after the conference. And I'm willing to share, you know, I'm happy to share this with you so you can distribute
thank you
to all of your viewers and put it in the show notes. The first one, finding buyers when nobody's buying. There was six takeaways. Number one is companies really need to be focusing on understanding their company's unique strengths. Mm-hmm. Right. The panelists said that in times like these, companies have to get really honest with themselves and dial it down to what makes them strong. What makes you unique? What is your bread and butter? What do you have a competitive advantage in? Right. Because when the market is good and the economy is good and everybody's buying and money is exchanging hands, it's really easy to get distracted from your bread and butter and try some new things.
Right.
And companies should do that, right? That's innovation and exploration. But in a time like this, mm-hmm. it's time to focus back in on what makes you brilliant.
And that can be painful, right? I mean, that can be painful for some people.
Absolutely. That can be painful. Yeah. You know, and I think an example of that would be our restaurant industry.
Yeah.
Right now, you know, people are not going out to eat. But what makes our local restaurants brilliant is their awesome food. Mm-hmm. And so people are still buying that food, right? Restaurants have had to focus on, okay, it's time to just make food. It's time to just do what we do in the kitchen and deliver that to people and let people come take out, because we can't provide that service of the restaurant atmosphere and all of these other things. That's not to say that that doesn't make our local restaurants brilliant, but it's just an example of how these market conditions have had to make our restaurants focus on a core competency, which is their food. Mm-hmm. Another takeaway was, allow that understanding of your company's strengths fuel your competitiveness and drive your innovation. Allow that understanding of your company's strengths fuel your competitiveness and drive your innovation.
Okay.
The next takeaway was, be an empathetic and genuine problem solver. Companies out there still have problems that they need to be solved. Mm-hmm. And so what that means is there's still opportunity for salespeople and businesses alike to go out and earn money, earn revenue by solving those problems. We just have to figure out new ways to ask new questions to pull those problems to the forefront so that we can help people solve them. Mm-hmm. So that goes to the next takeaway. Make sure you are solving the right problems for your customers, problems that they see as super valuable, as current, as mandatory. You know, it's time to be a must-have producer and not a nice-to-have producer. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Another takeaway is that doing this will help you identify the untapped potential within your current customer base, right? It's always easier to sell to your current customers than it is to get new ones. Mm-hmm. And so companies across various industries right now can be focusing on their current customers and helping them solve new problems. And then, one of our panelists said, make it easy to do business with you. You know, it's remove some of those hurdles that you've put in the way over time and make it easy to do business with you again.
What examples were given on that? Because I'm sure we all think we're easy to deal with, but what kind of discussion was that about?
Whenever he said that, and Kurt Barnes out of Atlanta said that, I think one of the things that stuck out in my mind immediately was something akin to your profession, which is, you know, don't make it so legally complex, mm-hmm. Especially in service contracts. You know, over right. time, our service agreements start to get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And before we know it, we've got a 40-page service agreement, right. and it gets stuck in legal for 30 days.
And nobody even knows what it says.
You know? And nobody even knows what it says. So I think that's a good example of, hey, look, you built the company on a 2-page service agreement, mm-hmm. and you trusted people. And you went out and you did good work. You got compensated for it. People trusted you. You know, maybe dial back to that place.
Yeah.
So that you can make it easy to do business with your company. That's just one example that mm-hmm. comes to mind.
You can't have a handshake deal anymore, but you can have a plain language, simple contract that still sets out protections.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's a really good way to summarize it. Mm-hmm. Our next panel was building businesses during a crisis. Mm-hmm. And there was 4 takeaways from that session, and I'll just rattle them off. Number 1 was to see all challenges as opportunities to learn. Number 2 was get honest with yourself, your company, your team, and the marketplace. Number 4 was identify what makes your company different and how that difference is a cost saver or an ROI generator, mm-hmm. right? The market right now is focused on saving money and producing a return. Mm-hmm. And so we've got to gear our messaging around how we do that for our customers and potential customers. And another takeaway, which I absolutely loved, was to lead with authenticity. No one, you know, and I think a good example of that is no one knows the right answer. no one knows exactly what to do. No one has a bulletproof plan moving forward. So just air that out. You know, no one's asking you to have all the answers. No one's asking you to be perfect. No one's asking you not to worry and not to be scared and not to be not to be emotional. This is hard times. Be authentic, you know, and people will, I think, follow that authenticity. Mm-hmm. We had a keynote speaker too. His name was Troy Hinnikoff. He's the managing director of Math Ventures out in Chicago. And some of his takeaways, number one was, you know, uncertain economic times impact businesses in different ways, but all businesses must survive, adapt, and thrive. And what he means by survive is make sure that your team and your customers are safe. That's priority. Adapt is increase your cash account as fast as you can, right? Mm-hmm. Sell off things you don't need. Look at your P&L again. Look at what you're spending money on. And if you're wasting money in certain areas, stop wasting money. It's time to get intentional about that. And then thrive is to plan and execute. Plan around the new normal and execute on that plan. Mm-hmm. One thing Troy suggested was to just give your knowledge away. Give it away. You know, he said that knowledge is something that you shouldn't hold on to. It should be something that you learn and you give to others, because you want rising tides to lift all boats. Mm-hmm. He also said, build a customer acquisition advantage. Get really good at getting new customers.
How so?
Yeah, well, so that comes back down to, again, being intentional about getting new customers. A lot of companies grow organically. You know, when I was a educator at UL, I worked with a lot of small business owners and got them involved in my classroom. And when they would come speak to the students would ask them, you know, how did y'all grow into a $5 million company? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times the CEO, the owner, the president would say, I don't know, it just kind of happened. You know, one customer told another customer, and that they told another. And then before we knew it, we were working with 15. And before that, we were working with 40, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think in an economy like this, it's going to slow down that word of mouth marketing. Because everybody's holding on to their money. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And also uncertain times lead to a lot of distrust and a lot of uneasiness. So I think it's time for all companies to sort of get intentional about their growth strategy and not assume that organic growth will continue.
Right. But, you know, the fellow that was saying, I don't know, you know, like your example about the $5 million company, he probably did know but wasn't articulating it, that they had been consistent, had provided value, and probably were easy to work with, you know, talked about being important over time.
You are exactly right. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of business owners out there listening to this podcast are going to be thinking, well, we've grown organically for the last 30 years. And, you know, but if they really think about it and they're asked to articulate it, they can tell you exactly who their customer looks like, what their customer looks like, exactly what they value, mm-hmm. exactly how to win that business, mm-hmm. exactly where to find that type of customer. They know how to go get it. And they have been going get it for a very long time. It's just they haven't been proactively intentional in maybe disseminating that know-how to the rest of their team, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Let people know we're still here and ready. Yeah. I'm thinking about a conversation I had with one of my friends, Todd Citron, you know, who owns Hub City Ford. And
sure.
Said, how's business? He goes, you know, it's surprising given the times, but they're selling trucks. It may not be as it would have been in a good spring, but they're doing okay. And I think it's because they've been there, you know, 75, whatever, 77 years now, and people know them, and the families, you know, buy Ford trucks, and the children buy Ford trucks, and it's just a long-term thing. But for all of us, we don't have that kind of longevity. So it's mm-hmm. how to build it, you know. What are you seeing people do? Are they maybe in this conference you said too, are people really utilizing the digital media because of its more effective targeting?
So here's the thing about digital right now, and you know, digital right now is in a unique place because a lot of the major digital ad buyers are pulling out of digital. And it's not because digital is bad. It's because they're looking at how do they adapt and keep that cash account handy. So they're pulling out of their digital marketing. Like for example, there's not an airline out there that's marketing online to sell air tickets because no one's traveling.
Yeah.
There's no point. It's a waste of money. Mm-hmm. So all of that cash leaves the competitive market of online ad buying. Well, guess what happens to the prices of online ads? They go to the floor. Mm-hmm. So right now is a really good time to get into digital, and because your pay-per-click prices are very low, which is going to mean your customer acquisition cost is really low. Mm-hmm. Now, that assumes that you have a really good website that you can convert those clicks into customers. You know, I'm making a lot of assumptions there, but mm-hmm. right now the digital ad space is a very affordable entry level. Mm-hmm. So if you've got the resources to begin dabbling in digital and you haven't, this is a really good time.
All types of businesses? Like,
it depends. I mean, some businesses are not conducive to digital, you know, a digital environment. I can't think of any off the top of my head right now.
It just seems target so much easier with information, I guess, you get. I don't know how to do all that, Reese, but I know there's ways you guys know how to get information about who's looking at this, what age group, what demographic, you know.
There are absolutely tons of tools. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the tools that come to mind, Google is a very powerful platform.
The analytics. Yeah.
The analytics is, you know, to plug in analytics to your website is absolutely free. There's so many great e-commerce tools out there nowadays, like Shopify, which provides platforms for local mom and pops all the way up to big companies, but specifically for local mom and pops to get on Shopify and start doing business through the web, you know? Mm-hmm. So there's a ton of tools out there. You know, there's Instagram, Facebook, all these new ways where people are actively engaged and their eyeballs are on those forms of media that you can get in front of for a very low cost or almost free.
Do you like LinkedIn? I noticed you post a lot of articles, don't you? Like, you give resources to people on LinkedIn.
I do. LinkedIn is probably my favorite platform.
Because it's really serious. People that are looking at that, they're trying to learn like you are. They're trying to grow.
Correct. I find that LinkedIn is a place where a lot of users are very ambitious. They're very driven. They self-select themselves in and say, you know, this is who I am. This is what I do. This is the company I represent. I like that kind of platform. I've been on LinkedIn for a very long time. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big user of Facebook. Mm-hmm. I don't have a personal Instagram account. So some of those things it's just kind of personal preference. Yeah. I try to, you know, keep my attention on certain things.
It probably depends on the business, like you said. Like if you're selling bridal gowns or flowers, Facebook is great.
But it does. And look, I'll tell you too. I mean, I'm going to admit some faults of mine here, but just the other day, I logged onto my Facebook for the first time in probably 3.5 years.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and I had an inbox full of people saying, hey, Reese, what exactly do y'all do at Fulcrum? Hey, I'm interested in learning. Yeah, I had all these people reaching out to me about what we do at Fulcrum, and I was kicking myself in the butt, you know, saying, like, how could I be so silly not to get on this platform and engage with people?
Yeah, but it takes so much time. You can get really pulled into it, and there goes an hour or two, you know.
It does. And I'm a big lover of this type of communication, you know, person to person, either face to face or virtually, but having a conversation, even though I've been doing most of the talking.
Well, I've got a lot to learn, so this is good.
I appreciate that, and so do I. And there's a lot to learn from you. I mean, the platform you've provided to our community, getting people to share their stories and their expertise, that's a educational piece that you're playing in our community. And so I think a lot of people have a lot to learn from you.
Thank you. I love this. I love the podcast. Love letting people like you talk, where we get to know you, but also it raises questions. Well, I want to know more about that. You know, I didn't know about this. So, but you're known in the business community. I think you've presented so much at these Innovate South conferences and different professional groups that I think there's a real demand by people that know that you can't just be slapdash anymore about the way you present your business or how you approach potential clients. You know, there's a lot to lose if you don't do it effectively.
Absolutely. And there's something else that, you know, a lot of people don't know about my background, is I've been in this game for a while. And what I mean by that is, you mentioned my reputation in the local community, and I'm very, very fortunate and blessed to have a lot of relationships with a lot of phenomenal people in this community. But I've been at it for a very long time. I've been at it for a decade, longer than a decade, and I'm 30 years old. And so what I would tell all my students is, this is a marathon, not a sprint. And when they would look at me, I'd say, I've been running the marathon, guys. You know, my relationships with people and a good reputation and all of that, it is not earned in a couple months.
Right.
It is curated and created over a very long time where you're putting constant effort in. And you're meeting, you're having conversations and meeting people that they may not even initially benefit you in any kind of way, but you're doing it because you care more about learning about people and making relationships with anybody over just being in it for the transactional relationship.
You know, that's tough. Sometimes when I hear people talk about how important networking is, you know, the quote unquote networking, it's not just showing up at a crowded when we can do that again, you know, showing up at a crowded meeting, giving your business card to everybody. That's so not, to me, what's effective. I guess it's a good way to introduce yourself, but it's really being consistent and showing that you're there and not just trying to bulldoze your way into a situation or just to make sales.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. I mean, look, to all the young people who listen to your podcast, you know, I had a part-time job at a, petroleum landman firm all through college. Worked for Brad Broussard.
Oh yeah.
And I met a ton of people in that role. You know, I'd drive them places. I would work on presentations with Mr. Brad. I would work on special projects with Mr. Brad. I met his family. I met, you know, the whole Bro family, the whole Broussard family, all of these great people in the community. And I was just a runner at a kind of like a law firm, you know? But I worked really hard to impress upon those people that I was someone that they wanted to get to know. Mm-hmm. And then I did an internship at the Greater Chamber, the Chamber of Commerce, back when Rob Guidry was the president.
Oh boy, you met everybody.
I met everybody with Rob, you know, and I met Rob himself, who is a phenomenal person. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I worked really hard to impress upon those people that I was someone that they wanted to work with.
And that stands and out that they, so much when a young person does that.
Well, that's what it's really all about, right? And that's why I would try to tell my students that this is a marathon. Every single opportunity you have is important to put your best foot forward. And if you do that for 10 years straight, you start to build a reputation. Mm-hmm. You know, because I'm a big believer in it's not who you know, it's who you impress. And who you continue to impress. And it's not, and when I say impress, I'm not trying to say you got to be flashy and all this
no,
stuff.
No, it's leaving your imprint. You know,
that's right. It's leaving. It's, and I should say, it's not who you know, it's who you impact. Mm-hmm. Right. And so being a professional salesperson is about impacting people in the way that they want and need to be impacted. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't always lead to a transaction.
No, but
it will always lead to a relationship.
It's that always be closing, but yet you're really always trying to leave value. And as you said, an imprint of who you are.
Correct.
Yeah.
You're always trying to impact them in a positive way. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of my mentors, what I've learned from them is they're always asking, how can I help? And it doesn't always benefit them. Actually, it rarely benefits them. Mm-hmm. But that question of, hey, how can I help? What do you need? How can I add value?
Yeah.
What can I do for you? Mm-hmm. Those kind of things will build a pipeline of business for you for a very long time.
Yeah. I was, when I was young, your age, a little bit younger, I guess, people opened doors for me. And I never really understood it at the time, but I do now looking back, you know, because I just, I had had some issues kind of being bullied, like you talked about, and some family issues. Mm-hmm. And I think people knew some of that, but I just really worked and you got through law school and, I think they just wanted to give me a chance because they saw I would show up like you have for others, you know.
Right.
And you're really at the best age right now to just, boy, it's going to be phenomenal, the opportunities you have in the future.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah. And, you know, it's a lot of it is I'm very, very blessed. God has led me down a phenomenal path. Mm-hmm. Jan, I've tried my hand at a couple different ventures in my life and fell flat on my face in a lot of them.
Oh, who hasn't?
And they've all, well, yeah, absolutely. And they've all taught me mm-hmm. and led me to this point in my life where I feel like I'm making a very substantial impact on our community. I feel like I'm impacting my team and all in my community and my team. My customers are all impacting me. And so a big thank you goes out to all of them and to you and to the greater community of Lafayette.
I'm glad you're here. Thank you. I really appreciate you taking time to visit today. And I want to send people to your website. It's fulcrumsales.marketing. Is that right? F-U-L.
That's correct.
C-R-U-M sales.marketing. And you can see more about what we've been talking about with their marketing team and what this inbound and outbound marketing is. And I look forward to hearing you speak to our Small Business Development Center group. It's a small group. You know, there's probably about 15 of us, different mm-hmm. businesses, and we're all trying to grow and learn. But the sales part, that's where we all feel like we need more help. So.
Absolutely. Well, and hopefully I can impact you guys.
Oh, yeah.
In some positive way.
We've been rallying get you there.
Well, I look forward to that. I've been talking with Monica about it, and it's going to be great.
I guess it'll be a virtual meeting. So
that's right.
Yeah, it'll be fine. So, well, Reese, Terrio, thank you so much for joining us on Discover Lafayette. And I want to thank our listeners for being loyal listeners. Please share word of Discover Lafayette with others. You can go to discoverlafayette.net. to listen to Reese Terrio's interview and all of our interviews. We have about 145. Or you can also subscribe, which I ask you to do. You can go to iTunes or anywhere you get your podcast, and you can do that on our website too. You can subscribe from there. Thanks to Raider and especially Jason Sikora for mixing our tape and for the long-term support of Iberia Bank and Lafayette General. We thank you all. On behalf of Discover Lafayette, this is Jan Swift.